have and the development of an RCS in our units is evaluated successfully developed. So let's finish the
thank you. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, Minister.
So your unit now doing these work in four things, obviously creates a lot of jobs and so on. But you also have research components and so on.
So what we have is in the restructuring of the department, some of the programs have now shifted to program six. These are headed by Alf Wolves, who's out of the country at the moment. So it's a combination of the environmental programs, the programs that deal with environmental issues and create jobs at the same time, and then these broader strategic focal areas.
So all these last stuff here are all now these units that was created, okay. Alright, sorry, who was speaking when I rudely interrupted them?
It's all based on the simple.
Yes, thank you, DG, thank you, and Honourable Chairperson. As the DG indicated, I'll present on chemicals and waste.
Hiding away there, my friend. You don't like a minister's DG, you don't like a hands-on approach, you want to be far away, okay?
I was trying to fill that room, Honourable.
We understand those personalities.
Thank you. Our first performance indicator is that waste management instruments developed and implemented. And under that indicator, we basically have about 11 targets. The first one is to finalize the waste classification and management regulations. The second one is healthcare risk waste management regulations and non-combustion efficacy standards developed. The third one is norms and standards for the operation of blending platforms. The fourth one is norms and standards for composting of organic waste. The next one is norms and standards for the remediation of contaminated land and soil quality. I think the DG touched on it when we started. So this is a norm and standard that will assist us in bringing Part 8 into effect. The sixth one is the regulations for industrial waste management plans, and I think honourable members will remember when we discussed the National Waste Management Strategy last year that we indicated that we will amend the Waste Act, and by the end of the financial year we want to have a draft waste amendment bill. The eighth one is the amendment to the waste management activity list finalized. And we want to host again as an annual tradition to host our waste coral. This year, this coming financial year, it will be the fourth one, it will be held in KwaZulu-Natal. We want to continue implementing the South African Waste Information System. And finally, under that performance indicator, to input into the waste management flagship program that DDG Climate Change spoke about. Next slide. The next performance indicator is the percentage decrease of waste going to landfill sites. Maybe let me just indicate that in this current financial year, we have set a baseline for all the waste streams. So in the coming financial year, we want to set targets for waste tires. This will be in accordance with the tire plan that the minister approves. And the second target there is to establish a surcharge of waste pickers in South Africa as they contribute to the decrease of waste going to landfill. The next...
Waste pickers?
Waste pickers, yes.
What are they?
It's the people that takes waste out of the rubbish bins when they get collected, yes. Some of them work at landfill.
Give them a name. Waste pickers. So they've been formalized. Now we can organize them and manage them. Okay.
The next...
Another the union.
Hey, go. The next performance indicator is the percentage of households with basic waste collection. Target for the year is reporting on households with basic waste collection. The next indicator is the percentage increase in hectares of land remediated.
But now, my friend, who's sitting in the back in the corner, far away from everyone. What do I understand under measurable increase from baseline? What on earth does that mean?
Honorable Chair.
How do we measure that?
Yes. The percentage households with basic waste collection currently sitting at about 65%. And this comes from the SSA report. So that would be the baseline for this financial year. So,
but how do I get all that stuff? Why isn't it part of the plan?
Which stuff, Doctor?
65%. What is a measurable increase? I mean, surely that's no use. A target that says a why don't we just for every target say a measurable increase?
Okay. Yes, I understand now. The difficulty is that this we work together with the Department of Cooperative Governance because they are the department that is responsible for the delivery of services. This is the service that is done at municipal level. So we're not necessarily so much involved in setting the target of how many households we can be able to increase that target with. We assist Department of Cooperative Governance together with municipalities in making sure that all the systems that they need in delivering a waste collection service to households in South Africa is in place. So this target specifically, you'll find it also in under, I think it's outcome 9 that is managed by the Department of Cooperative Governance.
But we do contribute to if the target of around 75% on the eradication of the backlog and also extension of services. So we have set in terms of our policy a baseline for which people must get the minimum service. But the issue is how we work with municipalities, and I think we can define the number chain. We will be able to finalize that number when we finalize the strategy plan.
Look, if there's two departments that together they work to get an outcome, I mean, the reason you do a strat plan is to get a budget. So we're not able to say what our role in that is and what we're going to do to achieve that. I mean, what budget do we expect from the next year? How do we expect them? Then later on, how do I in this committee then measure what we've achieved and so on. So it seems to me that there must be a better way of reporting this and dealing with it in the strat plan than this. Otherwise it seems to me to be a bit meaningless. So DG, you say you're going to look
at it? We work on it, Chair. For the fact we don't have the budget for it. That's why there's been the lack of commitment or vagueness in the branch because we have to find other ways to provide support to this program. But the minister is a signatory to the outcome 9 delivery agreement of the Minister of Cooperative Governance. So we'll have to work out a mechanism and we'll change a branch origin agreement with them when we know also what is allocated in terms of the municipal infrastructure grant in the area of waste.
Well, if we don't have figures and numbers to it, and even if it's not budgeted yet, but how do we fight for that money? We can't fight for something that's vague that we don't know. Okay. Sir, in the corner, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. The next assessment indicator is the percentage increase in hectares of land remediated. This we don't have so much control because we don't have Part 8 of the Waste Act into effect yet. So in this current financial year, we are setting up a baseline of basically identifying how much contaminated land we have in South Africa. And we're saying for the target for the 2013-14 financial year is to process 80% of contaminated land reports. Where we have not received a 100. The next performance indicator is the decrease in unlicensed waste disposal sites, and our current target for the next financial year is 15 waste disposal site applications should have been processed and submitted to provinces. because the provinces are the authority for licensing general waste applications, and all of these are general waste facilities. The last strategic objective for the branch is the impact of chemicals managed better managed, and we only have one indicator there, the number of chemical management instruments developed and implemented. We only have three for the year. The first one is the regulation for ozone depleting substances, which will be finalized. The second one is regulation for phasing out of PCBs and PCB containing equipment. And the last one is the development of a methyl bromide paper plan. And that is it. Thank you.
On the service delivery improvement plans and the targets that we have around compliance, we're looking at the reported fraud and corruption allegations that we will deal with, and we want to deal with within time frames, all of them. Response to the presidential hotline, we need to comply and ensure that they're 100% there. Percentage parliamentary questions, requirements and requests from members of the public that we responded to, is at 95%, Chair. The parliamentary questions are at 100%. This is a consolidated target because we're also looking at other requests from members of the public. This is why the cumulative one is at 95%. That's what takes it down. Otherwise, in the detailed ones, the Chair, for the parliamentary questions and the requirements is 100%.
Yeah, you know, it's difficult to understand why those two of them have to do one. Very difficult. I mean, they should be separate, surely.
We use the guidelines
from Chagas,
but we
can
fix them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it doesn't create a good impression that you've answered questions from 95%. Could you actually done 100%? Why? Because you're adding the public stuff. Well, the public things are different. It's a different response. It's a different basis of the response. There's no accountability. So yeah, I think this should be.
We'll change that.
Maybe you can get 100%, do it. Split it.
Okay, we'll change that. In terms of the standards in program 2, we're looking at a complaint or incident that we need to respond to, either through compliance or enforcement actions. We're looking at the 90% doing that, and then in the outer years we're moving towards 95% and hopefully we'll get 100%. Environmental decisions that we process within prescribed time frames, these will be in relation to your EIAs. Provided we're not getting more than 400 per annum, looking at the capacity we have, we're looking at 75% for this year, and then the outer year at 79%. However, in the detailed plans, Chair, we have split this from the SIPs that we have, the Strategic Import Infrastructure Program. And we have a higher target for those because we have to process 100% of those applications that we get. In terms of the appeals on our legal staff, we would like to finalize all appeals, 85% of our appeals within time frames, and we've maintained that target. Litigation matters that we deal with, 95% of those we want to finalize. And in terms of the prior compliance, our current baseline, Chair, is around 90%, and we're looking at improving that to 95% and eventually hopefully get to 100%. Under Program 3 on Oceans and Coasts, we're looking at applications for permits for marine research, off-road vehicle permits, dumping permits, and all permits for activities within the marine protected areas. We want to process those, 100% of those within time frame. In terms of program 5 on biodiversity and conservation, all applications for permits, whether it's in terms of sites, the TOPS, benefit and access sharing permits, we want to do 100% of those within time frame. On waste license applications, provided we don't get more than 200 applications in a year, we will be able to do close to 95% of them within time frame.
Yeah, that concludes our presentation, Chair. I think on the service delivery improvement plan as part of the strategic plan, most in areas where we're not having 100%, it's based on our available capacity and the fluctuation also of the demand. If we are receiving a normal number which meets our capacity, we'll be able to process those 100%. But this is more a proviso because it has happened both in the area of prior requests are processed within the set time frame. But again, if we receive many of them, it could be that our capacity would not necessarily be able to handle those. Similarly, with environmental organizations, we don't control how many applications we receive. So our capacity is based on what we have in terms of affordability, and therefore that's the capacity that is able to process within time frames all applications that are received. So that's more the proviso, but in general we try and meet the time frames and respond to members of the public.
Now, I think on service delivery, I think we must try and keep statistics in terms of not what is our target, but in terms of what we're going to get. Because I think we're not going to ever be able to engage Treasury properly for more money. We don't keep proper statistics in that to show that, you know, we can't deal with these issues because we don't have the capacity. So I hope we keep it like that.
Look, I think the obviously I found this morning relatively useful. Is there something
else? The presentation we have left.
What?
The CFO presentation. In light of the time. I don't know.
CFO.
Yes. Finance.
No,
we
do that in the budget.
Okay, thank you,
sir. Look, obviously this is a first attempt, and not a perfect one. As I said from the beginning, we really want to try and find our way, both the department and the committee, in terms of these issues. And obviously what happened at the end of last year, and it happened previously, but at the end of last year, it crystallized nicely. You see, the AG has certain ways that he measures performance, he or she. And you know that measurement is either 100% or nothing. You get green or red. And through engagements, or I think minister engagements and so on, they at least agree to yellow as well. So past. Of course, when there's less rates. But I think that, you know, in drafting these performance indicators and so on, that's why, unfortunately, you know, I wanted Treasury and AG to be here, because I want to engage them on these matters. Because at the end of the day, we also need to look at when we write our performance indicators, how possible is it for the AG and for us, the committee, to actually measure it? So sometimes when you say percentage, 20% of something, it is totally not meaningful. So we must find other ways of how we want to measure it. I mean, sometimes percentages are fine. I mean, like this, the service delivery things. If there's a number attached to it, then it's easy to say 100%, 90%, probably you're going to work it out. But if it's a strategy or a policy that you're drafting or something, and then you say, or a framework, as in some instances, then you say, well, we're going to implement 20% of that in 2-3 years' time. And clearly, that is just a recipe for disaster, because, I mean, you're always going to get caught short by the agency. You're going to never really be able to do it. So I think we need to also, some of your issues, and they're not probably many of them, but some of them we need to relook in terms of how do we want to present it so that it can be missed. For example, that increased measurement, I mean, that's just again meaningless. And how do you measure it? You're almost leaving it to our opinion and the AG's opinion whether it's been a measured increase. So you think 5% is good, but then the AG says, no, I think 10%. Well, there's nothing attached to it to measure. So I think some thought needs to get to some of those issues that we see in the spec plan. That we obviously, there are the guidelines of Treasury and all the things that we do, but we must also not be drawn into setting targets that we just know is going to either get us in trouble or can't be met. So I think there's some thought needs to be given to that. I think obviously what we try to do is to kind of, as being your partner, the committee being your partner, we wanted to have this meeting to try and get some of the thinking what's going on behind. So we went today through all these targets, which is something we could have done actually, of course, during the year, and then we will, because I mean, we obviously still have to be finalized and signed off by the minister, so there may still be some changes. But the whole idea is to try and get some idea, how can we, as a committee, or as, not just a committee, as stakeholders, so the AG as well as the Treasury, how do we draw the four of us together into a process whereby we can get behind some of the thinking in the department and so on, where the priorities are, why, what is being prioritized, and then how the targets are set and so on and so on. Because what it does, it makes us then look at what are the reasons for things. And most often there's not enough money, there's no capacity, etc., etc. So those things, it's very important that the committee, and particularly now that we've got the money going, you see, at the moment, 2 years now, we pass reports on the money bill and this has. But in effect, the money bill is all about saying, do we agree with all of the priorities of the department? Don't we think that certain monies must be moved elsewhere in the department? And then in very exceptional circumstances, how do we fight for more money that isn't there and we'll have to take it away from somewhere else? Now the motive. So as we become more sophisticated in this process of analyzing your work, your budget, your strat plan as a parliament, the overall idea in the end is to see how you exercise the powers under the money bill, which until now we've not done at all. We've just said, okay, yes, we agree with the budget, we agree, and that's fine. But at some stage, for example, if we feel that more money is needed, either within the department and maybe then have a debate on priorities, or money from outside, which is more difficult, because then you're trying to change. You know, you're obviously telling other departments we want some of your money. But all those processes are catered for in now the money bill in Parliament. But we're not getting there. So, but it's a process. And what we try to do here as an experiment today is trying to do some of that. Now, there's some aspects of it I'm not too happy with, not your fault, in terms of myself not fully understanding what the processes are. So we need to sit down, DJ, and try and think how we can find things. I think one of the things that we are now starting to do better, or wanting to start doing better, is at least to make sure that we don't look at things in isolation anymore. So there's 3-4 entities and the department. From now on, we would want to look at that work in an integrated way. So all the conservation stuff and the diversity stuff, we need to try and get that and look at that as the department unit that deals with it and those together, so that we can make sure there's synergies and so on, and make sure the department makes sure there's synergies, and make sure that the entities ensure there's synergies, and likewise with SOARs, with the climate change. So some of those things I think is already we started to do hopefully it will get better, and we'll plan the budget. All the discussions around the stuff we've not had yet, I mean, I don't know, when is the deadline for the strat plan? Was it? 13th. So, okay, then the budget hearings we can start after the 13th. So you've got time for then, and then we can engage with that. So we'll start setting up those hearings and so on to make sure that we try and do this process a little bit better. And hopefully this will help us. Of course, we have these documents now. These are not set in stone, because the minister hasn't signed off on it yet. I mean, she'll only sign off on the 13th, finally sign off. But at least what this does for the members is to start, you can now start going to look and engage with the indicators and with the budgets and stuff. So this gives you much more work to prepare for the budget vote, okay? And helps us. And then, as I say, we need to give more thought how to make this process a bit more meaningful. And maybe we can give some thought to it. So I think that's where we are with these processes. Anyone in the committee want to add or subtract? Dr. Huang, Ms. Wenger, Maharaja Kalala. Dr. Huang, Ms. Hassan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also, Honorable Minister, you want to attend. I'd like to get some information from the DG side regarding your ocean instrument for the rhino race. Because your target is 2013 to the 2017, 18 is rhino is 0%. And your baseline is 560. I don't know, your baseline 560 is a means indicator for the 2012, 2013 or 2012, last year. But the whole my information is due to the past 5 years, is the rhino poaching is over the 1,600 total amount. How you can target after 5 years is your target rate is zero. I don't understand this 0%, where you can put the 0% here, because you put the baseline is 560. So for the other information is due to the this year, from January until today, I think the rhino poaching is near the 100, especially in the some part is over 60. So I don't know, it's 2013-14, how you can target the rhino instant, the poaching instant is zero rate. And the second thing is regarding the socio-economic development. Your target is, your baseline is 378 per annum. Then your target is 2013-14 only for 280. Then up to the 5 years is up to the 2017-18, then you increase to the 1,566, then you spend the 360 at the minimum. How you can target that is 280 that came from which amount you will target. Thank you.
Ms. Wenger?
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Minister. First of all, I'd like to commend your department as far as the questions to Parliament go and to the Ministry and answering the questions. I think that they have performed exceptionally well, and I'm sure I would stand up for to say it's probably the best performing department of all the ministries. Mr. Chair, I have a concern about the target that there are no baseline indicators presently in any of the sections. And it's very difficult to comprehend and understand what 10% means of nothing and what 95% means of nothing. And I think it's very important for us to understand the complexity of the task at hand in order to be able to evaluate it. And I think if you go through the administration and look at all the different sections that have been presented, I think that goes right through across all of them. And I think it's very important that we put figures to that as well. Further to that, I would also like to make a comment regarding particularly of the waste management and so on. We're talking about unlicensed landfill sites, and we're talking about 314, but we're starting from nothing. So I don't know where the 15 comes in and where the 341 comes in, but we don't have a figure to kick off with. I think we need to have a lot of clarity on that, because we know that that is one of the major problems. And also the lack of funding, particularly, because now we're referring to COCTA. The COCTA is forever saying that they don't have funding available, it must be funded by the department. So we're basically playing a soccer match between the two departments as to who is responsible and who should be funding this. But the reality exists that the unlicensed landfill funds are causing a major problem. And I think that we need to address as well. Regarding the service delivery standards on slide 41, we're talking about the percentages once again. We're saying that the decisions and the potential impact and the development have to be provided. There's no more than 400 applications. I would like to see that we have, for instance, to say 250 applications, 100%, 300, 90%. You know what I mean? So if we have a sliding scale, but you could, because I think the percentage is misleading at the moment, because if it says 75%, if you have 199 applications, it shouldn't be 75%, it should be 100%. So I think if we can maybe adjust it accordingly.
I would like to congratulate the department, dear. The fight that we are put up facing this rhino poaching. And as for the recent one, I was so thrilled. Yes. And I felt that things are happening. But now, I sat down, I just rounded some of the paths whereby we have been. For instance, let's take the Port Elizabeth, the Ardo Elephant Park. It has rhinos, but we haven't had a report that the poaching is at its best. The Kruger, I'm telling you, daily bread, Kruger National Park, on behalf of this committee, Jefferson, why don't we suggest that border Mozambique can just a little bit be close, and then we see if there will be no difference, you know? Because both Mozambicans, they are the people who are letting us down on behalf of this committee. Maybe something can happen to them.
I think they should give that land to the committee. I think you should have added that much. We would go and guard them.
That is program 5. Our wetlands. I'm happy, Mr. Zawachi is there. And we are here representing the communities, Chapter. When we look at the sand patch, we look at our wetlands, we think of those people, the poor. And you go to Isimahaliso, when you get there, you see some products whereby our people can utilize for their living. You get there, you find Inema, they make Amakandi, they make Izimbo. It's a pity those who don't know what I'm saying. Sorry to them. They sell. At the end of the day, they can put the plate on the table for their families. Projects are very important, because that's where our living comes from. As ordinary lay people, you know. So this, a lot of that has been said about the wetlands, but with some parts I don't want to disturb what I've just said. To South African weather services, really and truly I am impressed day by day. The early warnings that come from them, as for my son, he will read that weather and smart. He makes such a point that, he looks smart, and he won't stop listening. Today, surprisingly, creating weather awareness amongst communities, right? We have got 11 languages, by the way. Ukwazisa umuntu ngemozulu. Yes, because it affects the poor people who cannot read English, who can't comprehend. They can't even read the first word creating. But thank you so much. Keep it up, indigenous.
No, there's quite a few languages that you've copied there.
Wonderful. That's great. Now, climate change and air quality. I've been listening to the presentations, because I was worrying about the COPs. COP 15, COP 16, COP 17, COP 18. And COP 19 is at the door. And I was saying to myself, but now, what is happening? Listen, what are the results? But today, at least, I've been listening and I know where the hopes are ebbing to. At least I can answer. I can be one of those who can tell about the hopes. People think, oh, they just go and have good times with their hopes all the time and whatnot. But today, I have learned a lot. That is program four. Marine protected areas. There was a time when there was a lot of poaching going on, whereby we had green scorpions. I don't know whether they're blue now. Maybe they might be brown. Yes. But now, it's a bit quiet, Dr. Mayekis. I can't hear anything of
the
that.
The silence is deafening, ma'am.
I see. Thank you, Chairperson. Air quality. I think there is a lot of improvement, Gigi. Because I remember, at a certain stage, when things were so bad, when you talk of Devon South, Sasolburg, as a cleaner, where people felt they were really dying. But now, I think there is something that has happened, because it is really quiet. The refineries, they were keen. People, especially when you visited the Devon South area. but I was told that since the old effort moved, there was an improvement. But I'm just worrying. I would like to know about the Mondi people. Where are they next to that school, next to those communities? But, well, I'm hoping for the best, because now less has been said about, the pollution affecting people with so many diseases. Thank you.
Thank you, Mom. Ms. Kusama.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I won't be long because my colleagues have taken some of my inputs. But Chair, I must say this Department of Environment is doing very well and we're always proud of it. But this rhino poison is spoiling our record, our history, all the time. Now, I was listening to the strategic plan presented before us here. I'm just thinking of the provincial strategic plan. Is their strategic plan talks to the national strategic plan in order to have a joint program of dealing with this issue of rhino poison? Really, it's very important, sir. All activities are happening at the ground, not at Pretoria, but in Cape Town. I always say that the people who are next to the activities are the provinces and the local government. Now, how do we interpret this different strategic plans to have a synergy in dealing with this issue of rhino poison? The reports are there, Chairperson, almost on a daily basis. Rhino poison. And our department has got plans and security is there, but these actions are taking place almost on a daily basis. Reports are coming after an action, hence we've got a spread plan on the ground. So I am saying this, Chair, really, we must look around this so that can make sure that we protect this for us. If all of us in the country, the three spheres of government, local, provincial and national, work together, not just working together by talking, working together practically, be involved, so that we can deal with this matter, or we can minimize these activities of rhino poison. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I will start first with the question from Honourable Ang around the issue of the figure that is on the paper. This is the figure for only Kokanasa Park. Over the last 5 years, we have seen a trend of the increase of the numbers get killed. What we did, we said, given the previous year's number, let's have the target for the particular year, but we should be saying it cannot increase more than that. Hence, we see a number called a baseline. The intention to say not more than 560, because we are from 600 and some odd. Therefore, we are saying not more than 560, it should be zero increase. Because we know, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, that there will be a continuity of losing some rhinos. But having a baseline to say not more than that particular figure, that's what we are aiming to do. If I can link the Honourable Zikalala and east of Kruger National Park in Mozambique, and the example you made of Ato. It is clear to us that the major onslaught is coming from Mozambican side. We mentioned five interventions in program two. One of the interventions we want to make is the reconstruction of that fence. Minister, at a political level, start consulting on that with Mozambique. At an official level, we have to do that because it's linked to the treaty between two countries. We just can't build. But in the meantime, we are getting setbacks ready. The time negotiations are finished, consultation, they will put up the fence. We cannot just run and put up the fence. But it's one of the interventions that I mentioned, they were mentioned earlier, those five interventions. There are others that we can talk to when we go to the details. The classic example of Ado is also a result of good community relations between Sandbach and the whole Sandbach River Valley and Ado area with communities. Because most of the infiltration by the syndicates, they do through communities. They recruit sub-shooters from the communities. Hence, one of the focus areas now is to continue working with communities. There's another idea, Honorable Chair, that we have just developed a concept of which our scientists are saying is the restorer. We are planning to develop a sanctuary where we can be able to take about 5,000 rhinos from Kruger National Park, put them in a sanctuary, but science is starting to say there will be a risk of inbreeding. We are saying it's not about conservation now, inbreeding, sir. That there will be bottlenecks in the genes and then inbreeding, they might become weaker. We are saying it's no
longer like those people in Alabama and so on in the
We are saying to them, honorable members, this is not only about conservation. It's more than that. Even if they inbreed, but we will still have rhinos in this country. Whilst other efforts and interventions are happening with the wildlife. The, even if, honorable members, this will need a special decree, presidential decree, whereby we say, around that sanctuary, nobody can come closer, even 100 meters. We need to train a special cop to deal with that. But all these things, honorable members, we need money to do it, because it's going to be an expensive operation to guard the sanctuary 24 hours. Patrol 24 hours, helping people there all the time in proper surveillance. Therefore, that's the thinking we have a special play, a concept, a draft concept held in place. Under this question, yes, we have a rhino settlement strategy. We are trying also to assist provinces. We spoke to SARS last week, where they even offered now 19 dogs and handlers. These are the dogs we want to deploy to the provincial reserves. Now at national, we are no longer doing policy where we want to interfere. This is the classic example of the sanctuary, the issue of the dogs and dogs handlers from SARS. They will give it to us free of charge, but we know 19 is still not enough. There's also some intelligence where this is happening so that we can understand the status quo. All of this will need money so that we can make meaningful interventions. Even training and deploying people in private farms, we need to do that because all we need is ground cover coverage. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think I will respond to the question by Honorable Venga with regards to the decrees on unlicensed land for science. We did the survey in 2009-2010 financial year, that's why we ended up with the 341 sites that at that time were not licensed. In 2011 and 2012, we looked at all of the sites that existed. So we did 116 in that financial year. Those were the easier ones because they were non-operational at that time. So all of the 116 were licensed in 2011 and 2012. This current financial year, we're busy with licensing 56. Again, these ones are also the easier ones, because all the 56 only require basic assessment reports. This we do through the EIA process. And then from here on, starting next year, we're looking at the bigger sites. That's why the number is a little bit low. That will require the full extent of the EIA process. So the licensing, we are doing it. We have not selected for municipalities or the Department of Cooperative Governance. We are moving towards eradicating that number. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I will clarify the question around the target pertaining to the socio-economic development objective. The number there, 280 in the year 2013 and 14, is informed by the budget. And then the number 1.566 in year 17 and 18 is a cumulative number informed by the budget for the next coming 5 years as well. Thank you.
Okay. And then, thank you. Lastly, Chair, and before I think the Minister may want to come in, I think the question from Honourable Benga on the baseline would apply across the board. Yes, we have not, in the presentation, we did not reflect the baseline, but as a practice in the structure, we will have the document, we'll have the baseline. It was just not reflected in this presentation today. So the document that you will receive will contain the baseline so that you can then assess how then the measures that, and the targets that have been set relate to the baseline. There are areas where baseline has not been set, and those areas, that's where we've indicated the key activities, one of them being to set the baseline. And I think the suggestion on the service delivery standards in respect to sliding scale is a valid one, and we were toiling around what is the best measure, and I think we will revisit those targets and bear that suggestion in mind. And I think Mr. Galala on the issues of air quality management, I think our work seeks to try and make sure that air quality management plans are developed for those areas so that over the period, even with the future developments, we can then track what is happening, what is the composition of the particles or particulate matter that is released by the various industries in those key priority areas. Our capacity for now is not going to be extensive to go to all areas. We're still focusing on the key priority areas. And definitely Sasol, Lake Secunda and Devon South are still part of our program that we are focusing on investments and systems to monitor the improvements on an ongoing basis. The key question on the oceans, on marine protected areas, as well as whether we still have green scorpions or blue scorpions, we do have the green scorpions, but the level of activity decreased when fisheries left us. So we no longer dealing with the issues of abalone pollution. However, we still have an interest in the matter because it is about resource conservation into the future. So we are not handling those activities ourselves, but there is a new area of enforcement that has been that we set in our capacity for in the area of oceans, both in terms of controlling the coastline and some of the measures related to illegal development along the coast require enforcement staff in the form of the EMIs or the green scorpions. And I think on that note, we thank the honourable members for for the input and we make the refinements accordingly. Thanks.
Any comments before we close?
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I just also want to express our sincere appreciation for yourself, Honourable Chair, and members for being called for this meeting. This definitely helps us to structure our step plans, APPs, in a manner that will actually help us achieve more and make an impact on the population. Just to touch on a few things that I think that need some addition from my side. Yes, indeed, first one being the rhino issue. We agree that this is actually a very, very important thing for our country to respond. We also do acknowledge that there's a need, as we are responding to that need, to have a collective and multidimensional, multidisciplinary approach to this problem, because it's not just an environmental problem. Yes, we're leading the pack in South Africa, but we're also happy that the ordinary community members, NGO sector, business have actually come on in a big way to help in fighting this threat of rhino poaching. I think Dr. Mugunda would first also mentioned some of the initiatives where businesses contributed quite a deal, and the rest of you would need research to DDG. We can tell you if you refer to some of the initiatives about the dogs and so on that are doing the sniffing, and it's not an exhaustive list. We have several other initiatives that are ongoing, including yourselves on a member of the legislative program that you have adopted now last year on biodiversity amendments, which are actually helping us to curb this rhino. We do believe that the impact of all those actions will be felt as we continue to mount this pressure. But on the Mozambican side, when is that meeting? We are meeting for the second time, if not the third meeting, with my counterpart in Mozambique. Unfortunately, the sent us now to be a new minister in Mozambique. But we have met the previous minister twice already. We had a discussion about this issue of defense. I'm sure all of our members will recall last year when we were actually thinking with our hearts, using our hearts to think and our emotions to think, where we even said it before we connected with the Mozambique that we are going to refurbish that fence, because the fence is there. We're flown over that fence, we've been to siege, part of the southern part of the of between border of Mozambique and ourselves has actually been lowered. The challenge has always been that even after you have put it back up, when you turn your back, it's gone again. And this is the reason why we have asked and has started collaboration with the Defense Department of Defense, which has now gone back to the border and that borderline to actually help patrol the borderline. The issue is not of the target, it's part of the national defense. It's part of our what is this convention that we have signed with Mozambique at presidential level, that there will be that fence needed to be there. So it's still part of that. We are working on possibility, high possibility, let me say, of erecting that fence. We have met with Public Works Department, who we were actually looking for budget from, because they did have money, they indicated, to refurbish that fence. The only thing that's there, I'm giving this data so that one of the members may just be aware of this. The only thing that's left now is to finalize this issue with the new minister and in that meeting on the 22nd, I think, which is next. Oh, yes, it's this Friday even. Yeah. So the minister and team will be coming here to finalize those discussions. Why we think it's actually important to do that is because we do believe that Mozambicans have to take responsibility as well, which we have told them, and we are going to be engaging with them further on this matter. Because the laws in Mozambique are very different from the laws as it would be expected, because countries' laws would not be different. But their laws are not quite strong on anti-poaching and conservation laws. So on that note, we thought that we should give them a chance for us to help them rework on their laws. But secondly, also not pounce on them with a fence. We had already discussed it with them. But we felt that it's important to also work on the community development, the communities in and around the areas where the fence, or the Transfrontier Path in particular, is, or that poaching has been much more on our side. In this engagement, we think that because the expatriates actually been arresting many of the Mozambicans who are grassroots people, the poorest of the poor. And those are the people who would have been paid 1,000 rands to come across such Suta and so on, who are really very poor. We thought that we should work with the Mozambicans on that program, or working on projects that are right, also on empowering the people on the ground so that they don't also become targets to the kingpins of rhino poaching. That's the one thing that we are doing. As I said earlier on, we are ready. Budget-wise, Department of Public Works was ready last year when we spoke to them. We had this discussion, but we thought that we should hold on a bit in advance until we have actually been able to prove that the Mozambicans are moving or not. So there's going to be a time when we say, have to say, no, enough is enough. We're putting a stop in this. We don't know when it will be in this meeting that we're going to, or another that follows. But working then, we thought that it's important to work with them. Just one small addition on the issue of the waste disposal side. When I was MEC for environment in my previous life, back then, 1997, we did a study in the country on unlicensed waste disposal sites, landfill sites. In my province alone, we had far more than 1,000 settlement settlements. And yet we had 19 licensed landfill sites. So the figure has significantly grown, I must say. And this is the intention that we have to move along to increase the licensed, to license them, because they are actually a serious threat to our water, serious threat to every kind of pollution we can think of. However, colleagues, honourable members, I have raised this matter with the department last year, that while there's a need to refurbish these landfill sites, we must also think big for the future, to have fewer landfill sites that are well-managed, kind of regional landfill sites, if you like, so that we don't have landfill sites every corner that actually get full, and then later on we don't know how to deal with that. We've been to countries like Finland, Sweden, and so on. They have landfill sites that are regional, and they work wonders. You can actually eat and serve a wedding at a landfill site. That's how clean they are. So that's the kind of direction we're going to. So this issue of refurbishing them, you must not wonder at times we would also have to go with them at some stage as we proceed into regionalizing the landfill site. The third issue and last that I thought I needed to raise, not last but the one quickly, is this issue of, I think DG thought on the matter of the baseline, just to reflect on them as we said. The issue of climate change, Mama says we're more educated. I think, Chen, it's important that our portfolio committee of DWAI, Water and Environmental Affairs, actually help us also to monitor progress on, as now at the home base level, progress on how we are faring as a government on response to climate change policy. Because remember, we have those sectors that have targeted transport, how they're cutting emissions on the ground. The talks are continuing, of course, at international level. But Julie has alluded to the work that's been done, good work that we're interacting on with other departments. It may well be necessary that as a portfolio committee says, through your route, you get to interact with other portfolio committees for them to get reports on what is transport doing, how far they are. What are we doing with green buildings? How far are we? Because there are something like 8 pillars we are approaching the core sectors now, including water and so on. So I think it's quite important. At an international level, these COP17, 18, 19, I must say that the discussions there are extremely, extremely important and very complex, I must say. We're talking as 194 countries of the world. Now you can imagine if 194 countries of the world get into one meeting, each one of us or each grouping having its own national interest back home. It's not an easy thing to extract info, and I think we need to congratulate those who have been leading this discussion set, including ourselves as well at this level. The some of the difficulties related to the following. We have a green paper on, not just all of our green, by the way, it's policy, on climate change. We are saying we need to create jobs in the country. Our climate change policy also states that there's a need to reduce carbon emissions on the sector of energy, for instance. We need to do a lot of renewable energy programs and increase them so that we have clean energy production in our country. As we do that, the life of social approach doesn't say we are expected to convert our, and many industries are able to, expected to convert their technologies or their plants to be carbon-reducing factories, sites, places like that. And as they do that, when they convert, there could easily be, have unintended consequences of job reductions, job losses, and so on. So we need either our own national interest. Remember, we said we'll implement this policy within our country's ability to finance program with funding available and support from international level, but also working and talking with our own industry so that we don't, we really have to achieve sustainable development in a true sense of the word and not jeopardize development or impact on development and job creation in at the expense of the environment, because that would not be a sustainable development. This is the reason why you find the Indians, Americans saying no to this. We are not saying no, but we're saying let's go ahead, slow by slow, and with action that's necessary. Yes, we do believe it has to happen, but within our interest of also at the same time, moving along with our industry, not overprotecting them, moving along with our own industry for the sake of job creation. Sorry, I'm elaborating on that, but I thought that we should really take this into cognizance. We are not asking industry to begin lenient, and to now say we are not going to move and so on and so on. We have some suggestions that we've made to some of them. Some of the problems I know, some of us don't like them, it's off track, and so on, how they can actually create jobs and development by offsetting. But movement forward, there has to be, because when the world is not standing still, we are threatened no longer at below 2 degrees, above 2 degrees now. What's the percentage now in terms of the latest report of IPCC, I think, we're heading for 4% or something like that. Now, 4% of global warming is a serious problem if we're heading that direction. It means danger to humanity, and particularly the poorest of the poor. We shouldn't sit back, and that's why all of us have got to continue to educate those of us who think that climate change discussions and carbon reduction emissions are a nice to have. It's not a nice to have, it's life-threatening. These tsunamis that are happening throughout it, no, we're dying about of this thing. And we're glad that some of the things, of course, not that it has happened, but because learning through the difficult way, some of the countries are beginning to wake up, having learned through their own floods and things like that that are happening throughout the country. So, Chair, I'll also ask that perhaps at some stage you travel with the committee to East Mogadishu. I've been there to see how good projects are actually happening, integration of how we can actually even increase this work that's been done by ordinary communities around the wetlands like that one. They're doing all sorts of beautiful things. Recently I was went there to actually hand over a big ship. This is a ship or a boat, that thing. That does the ferry of the people, and it's owned by ordinary community around that area. So there's a lot of good work that's happening, and I think that we need to move on to a less higher trajectory to ensure that such things do happen. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister, for those comments. There's a lot of food for thought. And thank you for the department. I think it was a good exercise this morning. As I say, I think, not from your side, but from a conceptualization side, we have to look at and give some thought on how we do this, looking at the indicators and so on. But I think already we've indicated that there are some things that we think are weak. Percentages issue and so on, where there aren't specific figures but guesstimates. The whole issue when the matter is presented to do it with baselines, because it gives one some space to discuss and so on. So I think there's as we go along, this is not a perfect job, it's a work in progress and continues. Every February we look at the budget, and then at the end of the year the performance and so on. And trying to make it work better and better, which is the important thing. And not to find a perfect project, which I don't think exists. I think also we've raised some issues all these things we'll be looking at from the 13th of March, which will include the finances and then some of the plans and projects. Here are the usual things we do. But we have indicated that you also indicate this time quite clearly to us in the plan and in the budget and so on. For example, how do we meet our MDG? How do we meet our other international obligations? How do we the national plan? So that we start pulling those things also together. We've also indicated that this time we want to integrate the department, the entities a bit more in dealing with it. So that's also going to be new. We're going to have to experiment a bit how we do that, but that'll enhance things, I think, quite a bit. Did you also have discussion, and actually it came out later even more, that issue of us looking at a tool to try and put the extremes of what we've agreed to, that in oceans we're going to achieve this ultimately, in this we're going to achieve, and then to create a tool to show where we are in different stages, so that if all of us look at it, that we're all actually talking the same language, you know we're there and so on. And then, for example, the land conservation, which clearly we're only going to be on, we're targeting 10%, and our international obligation for 2020 is 17%, you said. Now, it's clear that there we're going to have to do something special. Now, the problem is, as I say, I want to start moving the budget discussions and the performance away. I mean, there's some basic stuff we have to do, and that's fine. But I want to start moving it away in terms of how can we use the money bill and what it provides Parliament with more creatively. Of course, it won't just happen overnight. We'll have to look at it. But for example, I mean, here's an area clearly where we need more money, one way or the other. There's no way of getting out of it. Unless we can get people to make 7% of the country to us. Otherwise we're going to have to buy it. And so on. So I think that those issues are very important. I hope also there are some issues from the other hearings, like the mining issue that stood over. I think we can get those reports also during that process. The other thing that we usually don't concentrate well on is that compliance report you do, the green one. I think that must be properly reported on as well during the hearing. So I think those. And then, Oh yes, we also said the Paja and Paia. That
that we start getting a picture of how the department was dealing with it. Because as I say, the overall reports that are coming out is that government's doing very badly on budget and payment. So I want us to this year look at our two departments specifically. What have we got in place? I mean, how well does it work? How often do we, how quickly do we respond, etc., etc. So we can see how that works for us. It's particularly important in an environment as a policy structure must be very, very good with their payer. It becomes a bit more complicated in other departments, like, say, police, for example, which they action-orientated. It's a bit more difficult in terms of what you report. But in a policy department, it's clearly very important that we do our budget. So budget and payer as well. So we had that. I think those are all the issues. Oh yes, I didn't raise it, although it was in here. You know, you're bringing up more and more white papers, like the oceans one and so on. One thing I haven't been here long, that's why maybe I don't. One thing I'm not clear in my mind is how many areas we have policies completely and in which areas we actually need to relook them. So like I know there's now a white paper on climate change, the oceans one is there that we're now busy dealing with, etc., etc. But also in our inputs during that the policy, whoever deals with policy issues, gives us a better picture in terms of which policies are, like either white papers or whatever, are there, and how relevant are they still, or are they in the process of being updated. So one has just a clearer view of the policy area, okay? Then also, as far as legislative instruments are concerned, I was actually interested when you went through the targets. There's a huge amount of regulations, frameworks, and things that either are being drafted, just have been drafted, or have to be drafted. Also, to get all that in one kind of document, one can see that these things are being drafted, these aren't being envisaged, and so that one has some idea as well, more coherently. So both in terms of policy and legislative frameworks, just to put those more coherently, not as targets necessarily, but that one can see them when you come into meetings. I'm sure before you come, we'll have more discussions on it. If any of the members also want to raise some things, they can raise it with me and I can feed it through to the department. But I think that gives you some ideas of how to prepare for the budget hearings and so on. But once again, thank you very much. I appreciate the work and so on. We'll have to find a way. But the AGM and Treasury may be invited to the budget hearing, so that they're there at least. We have that engagement with them. Okay. And then I said also for us to look a bit more clearly before we sign that strat plan at also look at from the other side, how the AG and the problems or the weaknesses that we're experiencing because of the way they deal things, how we then actually project our step there to make that work in our favor and not work in our disadvantage. Okay? I think those are all the issues. Anyone want to add something? Thank you very much. And tomorrow, are we here again? We're here again, and we'll firstly receive a report from the Water Research Commission on the conference they had and the kind of policy and the issues that came out of that conference to kind of stimulate us looking at water. And then we'll take the COP18 tomorrow, they're reporting back to us also, so you'll have a fuller report on COP18 tomorrow. I'm sure it's Bowman. Just before you guys, I'm assuming. The ANC people, just please meet with Mr. Skosana afterwards quickly. There's just some issues about parliamentary issues he wants to quickly raise. Okay. Thank you very much. Is that it?